Blog Talk Radio.
Court. We'll get into that later this week. It's a major case that's been censored and suppressed in the media, and it affects every U.S. serviceman and woman who's accused by local civilian authorities of violating state law. It's also Fleet Week in San Francisco starting Thursday, and we're going through our archives. We have, like I said, over 1,500 interviews I've done in my career, and we're still doing some. And we have today an interview that I did with a British citizen who ended up serving in the Canadian Navy and then emigrating to the United States and living in San Francisco, or in the Bay Area, excuse me, along with the British Legion and the Canadian Royal Canadian Legion. These are not known as veteran service organizations. And the sun never set on the British Empire, especially in California, because there's a lot of Brits who served in their military in all their wars who settled in all parts of California, including the last British survivor, the last British commander of the Bengal Lancers, Brigadier Ingle, the last British-American survivor of Gallipoli, Colonel Trevor Hodges. We have all those interviews. Unfortunately, I didn't get some Poles who served in the RAF during World War II, and I didn't get Raul Almison, who escaped from Bataan Corregidor, who had just been newly minted as a legal officer in MacArthur's army, but we made up for it with other things. So anyway, we'll deal with today's birthdays. George Bancroft was born today, and the Bancroft Library, I guess he's related to the founder of that, in Berkeley, most famous library, and then Bancroft's History of California, History of the United States. Also today, those of you who remember when Commodore Perry opened up Japan, there's a kind of a controversial movie called The Barbarian and the Geisha, starring, of all people, the mighty John Wayne. And he played the role of Townsend Harris, who was the first consul, the diplomat that the United States sent to Japan during the Meiji period, to represent the United States interests. And John Wayne starred, I forgot who the woman was, in the movie's called The Barbarian and the Geisha. It's interesting. John Wayne also starred as Genghis Khan, if you can believe that one. Also today, in the field of medicine, Sir Patrick Mason was born today. He's the father of tropical medicine, along that line, in 1854. William Crawford Gorgas, he's the guy who helped develop an eradication of the yellow jacket mosquito, which was causing yellow fever, which prevented the French from building Ferdinand de Slips from succeeding in completing the Panama Canal. The Americans went in there under Teddy Roosevelt and dealt with the yellow fever problem first, wiped that out, contained that, and then they were able to bring in laborers who were able to successfully complete the Panama Canal. And we had also Gorgas, I think, was the engineer, and then Goethals, I think, was the other guy. We'll get into that another day. Also today, famous Polish conductor, music conductor, who was conductor of the Minnesota Symphony. Stanislaw Skrobacheski was born today. One of my favorite authors, he's very acerbic, with a very sharp tongue, Gore Vidal, and it's very important that people follow, check up in your local video stores. Gore Vidal is the best man. It's very relevant to the presidential politics even today, and I think I'll play a clip after we get, let's see, where are we at here? I remember in the 1968 convention, the one night I took off, Gore Vidal and William Buckley, the late William Buckley, were debating, and Howard K. Smith was the MC, and William Buckley was wearing his seersucker suit, and he looked flush with it. Gore Vidal was being his usual detached self, and something was said between the two of them, and Gore Vidal, William Buckley referred to Gore Vidal as a certain kind of Nazi, and crypto-Nazi, I think is what he said. And Gore Vidal said something else to William Buckley, and it happened so fast they couldn't blip it, and Holly K. Smith was very embarrassed. Excuse me. So, but Gore Vidal is still alive, born in 1925. He recently lost his partner. He lives in Italy, and he writes from time to time. I'm wondering what happened to all of my interviews here. It's very important, I think, that we hear a lot of the things that the beautiful writing and very perceptive scripts that Gore Vidal wrote for his movies. He disavowed Myra Breckinridge, which was trash, but he did one for Bell Telephone on Colonel Alfred Dreyfus, or Captain Alfred Dreyfus, and was still a scandal that rocks the French military and French politics today of anti-Semitism, and one of the most notorious trials in all of military and civilian judicial history. What happened to here we go. This is a problem that's going to come up, and this is in The Best Man, which starred the late Cliff Robertson, and of course it wasn't it's an issue about the sexual preference of politicians and whether this is relevant. And Clint Eastwood plays this Nixon-type character, and Henry Fonda plays this I don't know what you call him. I don't know if you call him a Kennedy, but they have some dirt on Cantwell, who was in the U.S. Army, in the Navy, and he had a homosexual affair with Shelley Berman, played that actor, and the opposition to Cantwell's nomination for president gets this information, and this is how the former president, a Harry Truman-type character, deals with it. And he says to him, you've got this, and you've got to use it, and what's the matter with you? And let's hear. Here we go.
Like this, even against Cantwell, what would happen if you had to make a quick decision in the White House, and maybe all our lives depended on whether you could act fast, and you just sat there having a high old time with your divided conscience?
I'm not divided. I know what I should do, and this is not it.
Then you don't want to be king of the castle, so stay away from us. Be a saint on your own time, because because you ain't fit to lead anybody.
Why? Because I won't shoot off a cannon to kill a bug? Because I don't have that mindless reflex you confuse with strength? Don't you understand? If I start to fight like Cantwell, I lose all meaning.
If you don't start to fight, you are finished. Now, I am here to tell you this. That power is not a toy that we give to good children. It's a weapon. And the strong man takes it and he uses it. And if you don't go down there and beat Joe Cantwell to the floor with this very dirty stick, then you've got no business in this big league. Because if you don't fight, this job is not for you. And it never will be.
And it's basically politics. It's sad to say, but you have to take those very rough decisions. I've seen politicians and what I call statesmen have problems with this, whether you decide that the morality doesn't would prevent you or raise questions about your own personal ethics. Sometimes you have to raise these questions, and they're going to come up. I predict that we're going to see scandals that were going to rock Washington from the banks of the Potomac to the dome of the Capitol. Some of the things that some of these public officials have been engaged in and they've tried to cover up, but they're so incompetent and so corrupt that all this is going to come out in when they least expect it, in the worst possible way. And I just hope the country can survive. It's unfortunate that it's gotten to this point, but they've embraced some of these agendas, and it's like an anaconda. It's like a panther that's going to envelop them, it's going to embrace them, and squeeze the political life out of them. It's sad, but again, here's another issue that Gore Vidal raised, and it's part of the script.
This is exactly the sort of thing I wanted the politics to stop. All the business of gossip instead of issues, personalities instead of policies. We've got enough on Cantwell's public life to defeat him without going into his private life, which is nobody's business.
Any more than yours is?
Any more than mine is.
Cantwell is using your private life.
All the more reason I don't use his. I'm not Cantwell.
No one's used anything yet. Jensen,
see if you can arrange a meeting where nobody can see them.
Go on.
That's another part of the question, should politician use dirt that he's have on his political opponent? But again, if the survival of the country is at stake, you may have to do that. And we have people in there who think that they're untouchable and they can do what they want, when they want, and how they want, and to whom they want. But there's always karma that catches up with them, so we'll leave it at that. Back to the birthdays today, and then we'll get on to the British sailor. Also today, the one interesting death in 1656, getting back to the early colonies, Miles Standish, who was one of the founders of the Plymouth Colony, he died today. And getting back to dirt, in 1988, the founder of the National Enquirer, which is kind of dicey on some of these issues, Generoso, I don't know where he got that name, Pope Jr., he died today. He's the founder of the National Enquirer. Among the events today, it's coming up in November, Thanksgiving. But it didn't start with Abraham Lincoln. In 1789, one of the last things George Washington did was proclaim Thanksgiving Day for November 26th. That was the first instance where a president proclaimed a National Thanksgiving Day. However, in 1863, in the middle of the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln proclaimed that the last Thursday of November would be Thanksgiving, and it's been that way ever since. And getting back to the presidents, in 1913, President Wilson, incidentally, was the last president from New Jersey. In fact, I think he was the only one. We've had, now we're hearing a lot about Chris Christie, who looks like William Howard Taft, and somebody ought to ask him, how's your health? And we've also had other candidates for president talked about from New Jersey, Bill Bradley, the former basketball player and senator. He was thought of as a Democratic nominee for president. We had Robert Maynard years ago, Catholic, He was thought of as a presidential candidate, thought he had presidential timber. But they're talking about Chris Christie, and he hasn't even proven himself as governor of New Jersey. He should deal with that first. The same thing goes for Sarah Palin, that she should maybe run for a federal office like U.S. Senator and get some seasoning. But Woodrow Wilson actually was born in Virginia, and he was president of Princeton University, and then he got elected governor of New Jersey. He was a racist. He's the one who resegregated the city of Washington, District of Columbia. He was quite a prig. He had four daughters, and because of him, the League of Nations, the U.S. Senate, wouldn't ratify the peace treaty and the founding of the League of Nations, which may have prevented World War II. He also had a wife, Edith Bowling Wilson, who, when Wilson had a heart attack, she was signing documents and acting as Mr. President. A lot of controversy about that woman. And let's see. Now, also today, this history affects all of us today with all the problems in the former Yugoslavia. The Kingdom of the Serbs, as it was called, Serbia, the Serbs, the Croats, and the Slovenes became Yugoslavia. And then went through all these problems. There was one of their King Alexander was during the 30s, and went to Paris on a state visit. He was assassinated. Then we had the problems in World War II in Yugoslavia when the Nazis and fighting the communists and Tito. After World War II, we had Tito. And I did an interview with a former lieutenant in the Yugoslav army. He was Croatian and Catholic, a good friend, Armin. And we'll run it again because it's very relevant. There's things about Tito that I didn't know. Also, we have the World Federation, the first successful flight of the V-2 rocket, 1942, occurred today. In 1945, the World Federation of Trade Unions became the CIO. Those of us who were into the recording industry and like tape, 1952, the first video recording of a TV show occurred. And then remember Captain Kangaroo and the thing he said, that ought to hold the little bastards, got him into trouble. That show debuted in 1955. And then Bank America had its first success with its credit card. In 1960, we had a store in San Francisco called the White House. They were the first department store to accept the Bank America card. And I don't know who's accepting them now. And then if you remember the TV show of the Talking Horse, Mr. Ed, that debuted today. And then the first black manager of a baseball team, Frank Robinson, became head of the manager of the Cleveland Indians. And then we had, in 1974, the Watergate trial started, compliments of Judge John Sirica. And then we had the merger in 1990, we had the merger of East and West Germany became once again the modern Germany. And among the interesting religious dates today, since we are in Rosh Hashanah, the first Jewish college was set up in Cincinnati, or Cincinnati, which ironically was known as Porcupoculus because it was known as a hog butcher town also, where a lot of the pigs were slaughtered. But, you know, and of course, Jews, conservative Jews do not eat pork. The first Jewish college, the Hebrew college, was set up to train men, not women, men for the rabbinate. Since this is Fleet Week, and this is one of the rare interviews, I'm going to play the interview I did with a former British sailor who served in the Canadian Navy. Excuse me. And, he also emigrated to Canada, tried to get a job up there, and he ended up down here in San Francisco, the Bay Area. I did quite a few interviews with these folks, and I'm trying to find him. I still have this problem with the studio set up here. Just bear with me for a second, and we'll bring up this interview. It's a long interview. We're only going to have part of it today. Where is he? Okay. Huh. I am sorry. I still have this problem with this system. And we'll get it together. It's a long interview that I did. It's fascinating because we get into the joke is, how do you deal with a drunken sailor? And here we go. Here's the first part of the interview.
As I say, the raids used to fade out around about midnight soon after. But when we had a major blitz, they would start at 4:30 and go on right round to 5 or 6 in the morning. And with all the banging and hear these bombs whistling over your head, you know, I remember sitting by the fireside one night when this raids were going on, and we heard this thing coming. It was, and of course it passed over. Well, once it passed over, at that time, when we heard it coming, we all bent our heads down like that. Just as a, you know, you're ducking, but there's nothing over your head to protect you. Well, anyway, in the morning, you would wonder what the hell was left, what had happened. And maybe you look out your windows and everything was serene and as usual. You think, well, what the hell happened last night? The odd time you'll get a big bang and there'll be a house or somewhere close by be flattened. Or you hear that they dropped a landmine somewhere. With my job, we were told that we've got to go out here, go out there, make first aid repairs to the houses, board up windows that are blown out, or fix the roof so it wouldn't leak. But anywhere a landmine fell would clear the whole area for a quarter of a mile radius. Everything would be flat.
Howard, how did you end up in the British Navy, though?
I'm coming right to it now. As
it takes a while,
being exempt, 42, I had...
How old were you at the time?
Oh, crikey, I'd have to work that out. This is going 1916 to 42. What is that?
Well, that was 35 years ago.
You were 26
then, huh? Yeah, around about there. Okay.
Bloody old man.
Anyway, when you get the tape, you can work that one out. So, I volunteered. I thought, I'm not going in the army. This chasing people over the top with a gun with a knife on the end
of it. You didn't want to be in the trenches, though.
No, I did not.
Okay.
And prior to that, my early days as a civilian, I wanted to join the Navy. Mm-hmm. So, what happened? I volunteered for the Navy. And when this was in February 42, they told me I wanted to go in as a plumber. They said, we don't want no plumbers, we're full up. You have a choice, ordinary seaman or marine. Now, the British commandos were all marines. And I thought, none of that nonsense for me. I'll scrub the bloody decks. Ordinary seaman, I joined up. So now in the English Navy as an ordinary seaman at boot camp, I decided to see if I could get into my job. And it so happened that they told me, you'll have to take a trade test, get references from the people you work for, and take a trade test, which I did. They sent me on a trade test, I passed that, and I was recommended for engine room artificer, coppersmith. I was then sent to Rossi, the Boy Arts Training Center, 6 months there, and I passed out as a coppersmith, and from an ordinary seaman, I went to acting petty officer. Petty officer,
that's
acting
for. That's because he was an artificer.
That's right. Well, no, from then onwards,
earned the rank.
My first ship, after I passed out, was the illustrious class aircraft carrier Indomitable.
Oh, okay.
I went aboard her as a trainee, and during my time we spent the first 6 months or so in the Clyde doing workup trials. Then our first engagement was for the invasion of Sicily.
You two were in the same area roughly, eh?
Yeah, this would be 43 this was. Yeah.
I went to North Africa.
So at any rate, we were covering force for the invasion of Sicily. It was night time. For a week we'd been going up and down covering the coast of Sicily, and not a thing was happening. And I used to play when the news came on Rule Britannia, and I thought, Christ, how true that is. It seems as though we've got
a... You didn't see the Italian Navy?
No. Well, anyway, the thing was, on the 15th of July in 43, 10 miles off the coast of Sicily at midnight, we were torpedoed. A twin-engine torpedo bomber picked out the dark side of the ship, and he came down...
This was a German?
Yes. I say yes, it could have been Italian, but to me, the Germans held their own in the Mediterranean. And so he dropped his torpedo and hit us in exactly the same spot as the Ark Royal was hit, and she sunk. But at the time, a little earlier on, prior to joining the Indomitable, she had been in a Malta convoy and had a near miss on the stern and dislodged a plumber block, so one of the shafts was off centre, and they also done a bit of damage to the stern. She came back to England, was in Birkenhead, Liverpool, and they repaired her there, and I joined her after they finished repairing her. And it so happened that while she was in there, the mistakes on the Ark Royal were modified. They put modifications in their ship. They put in diesel generators, so if you lost your steam, you could get electricity to drive the pumps to pump out the water. The air intakes to the boiler room was a big open space, and on that deck was three boiler rooms in that ship, and the port boiler room, starboard boiler room, and the centre boiler room was all on one level, the air intakes to the boiler rooms. And so when the Ark Royal was hit, the port boiler room was flooded, and as she started to heel over, the water ran into the centre boiler room and then eventually ended up in starboard, so we lost all steam, no ways of pumping out the water. So with the Indomitable, they modified these things and corrected them so that when we were hit, the modifications, especially in the force bulkheads and the air intakes to the boilers, enabled us to, although we went on a 15-degree list, they were able to flood up the rapid floods on the opposite side and brought the ship back on an even keel after 40 minutes. We lost out a crew of 1,000. At that time, we lost 4 people in the boiler room, port boiler room, which was hit, and above on the wings, as you might call it, on the port side, there's an air compressor room. And when the torpedo went through, it blew the deck out on the air compressor room, so everything dropped down in the bottom of the ship. The three fellas that were in there were drowned, well, killed by the explosion. And the 4 people in the boiler room, 7 people lost their lives. Well, anyway, after that, we came over to the States to be repaired. I left the ship there, went back to England, was in the base. And I was in the base at Portsmouth for a while, and then I was drafted to a brand new cruiser. We commissioned that.
What was the name of that?
The name of the cruiser was the Diadem. She was a modified class of the Dido class ships. She was a modified class. Instead of having the rake funnels, she had the straight funnels. And one of the things about her, she's made to look like the KG-5, that's the battle wagons, the Prince of Wales, so that from a distance, a silhouette, they would think it was one of the battle ships. Yeah. Well, anyway, then when I was on her, we done Norwegian patrols, a few Atlantic patrols up Norway into the fjords. And
you didn't meet the Tirpitz, did you?
We missed that. She was engaged. The other people had that. We were somewhere else at that time.
Okay.
Anyway, the thing was, we... was on patrol, and then we went on a few Russian convoys.
Was that the really rough Murmansk run?
We were lucky. The big pressures were in the early part of 42, and we're now going in the 43-44.
Wow.
So we had it a lot easier than the original convoys, but we still had to run against the wolf packs, U-boats, And our last trip we made into Mamanx. Now, when we took the convoy up, we did not go down into Mamanx itself. We anchored in the Kola Inlet. Mm-hmm. And we were told on this last convoy we took up there, we got right through with nothing. But when the convoy broke off from the escorts, the very first ship leading was one of the corvettes.
Okay.
I can't remember now, it was a flower class name. But she was hit and sunk. The first merchant ship was hit and sunk. We were told when we entered or reached the Kola Inlet that there had been reports of German submarine U-boats hanging around the mouth of the inlet. Our job was going to be that we would act as a decoy. The cruiser and a couple of the escort vessels, we steamed around the inlet from midday. He's pointing to your drink. What are you? The ice is melting.
We'll continue with this interview. It's a 45-minute interview, and the next part will be Wednesday when he's at Murmansk. And I'll also try to get in the Russian sailors, the new kids who are in the Russian Navy and Maritime Service. And we'll get into some of the other subjects that who are these pollsters? Are they really some of them fabricating polling results? And a growing number of people are asking how these things are done, who verifies, who's been asked, who composes the questions. This is Peter Paul Brazola. We'll skip politics and poker, but we'll be back continuing our Fleet Week salute. This is Peter Paul Brazola. So we'll see you back Wednesday at our new time, 3 o'clock, and this is going to go on through Friday. We have a lot of military history and interesting stuff that you're not going to hear anyplace else. This is Peter Paul Brazola. This will be up on the Internet, and you can listen to it at your leisure, at your pleasure, and I hope it's informative. Good night.